You're listening to STEM Essential, an Iowa Governor's STEM Advisory Council podcast. Hear from leading advocates and voices about why STEM education is crucial for our world today and tomorrow.
Welcome, everybody, to Series 3 of STEM Essentials, podcasts featuring some of Iowa's and the nation's leading thinkers in STEM. This series is all about vaccine by STEM. I'm Jeff Weld, director of Iowa's STEM Council. We're an edgenomic development initiative where education and economic development merge to improve lives and communities. The people we're hearing from are edgenomic developers commingling their jobs with learning. Today, featuring our lead-off guest for this topic, Dr. Nafisa Cisse-Ebonye, public health director for Black Hawk County. Texas A&M University awarded her a doctorate degree in public health education. And at San Diego State University, she earned a master's degree in public health promotion. Rare that Iowa, given today's weather, pulls talent from Texas and California. We are so glad. But Dr. Cisse-Ebonye is no stranger to Midwest weather, raised in Illinois after being born in Niger, West Africa. She speaks four languages. By the way, what are they?
I speak, well, English, of course, French, and I speak Zarma and Hausa, which are native languages to Niger.
Oh, fantastic. These skills enabled her to work closely with refugees in the San Diego area afflicted with HIV. Dr. Cisse-Ebonye serves on the boards of Allen College, Delta Dental Iowa Foundation, and Grow Cedar Valley, as well as Iowa Public Health Association's Public Health Advocacy Group. She and her husband have two young children, yet she has somehow made time to sit down with us today. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So let's get started by inviting our listeners, many of whom are youth, and these youth are hopefully prone to career inspirations and the adults who help inspire them. Help us all get to know you a little better. How did you arrive at this line of work that you are in? Take us back to your own K-12 experience or to your collegiate years and tell us what or who set you on this path and how.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. Wow. So, you know, when you're young and you have aspirations, different aspirations. And so I recall there was days, you know, where I wanted to be a dancer or a teacher or, you know, a mom. Those are all the different things, you know, that came to my mind, but definitely not public health at the beginning. But one of the things that I knew very earlier on in my life was that I wanted to be in a field in which I could contribute to society. As you mentioned, I am originally from Niger. Niger is one of the poorest countries in the world. I came to the United States by myself at the age of 6. But my journey started in the Midwest, actually in Illinois. And so the joke in my family is I'm back to my roots, you know, being here in Iowa. You know, I always wanted to be in the field of service because, you know, I recognize the opportunity that this country has given, not just myself, but my mother who was studying here and doing her doctorate as well. And so that was my way of wanting to just contributing back. And so it was during undergrad that I decided that, you know, it was, I wanted to study public administration. Originally, I was thinking about doing business administration, but I was like, you know, business is important. I believe in businesses. But it was like, you know, I'm more policy oriented. You know, I wanted to make, you know, be part of, you know, decision making that impacted people's lives in some shape or form. So I did my undergrad in public administration with an emphasis in public policy, but I took a course called Confronting AIDS. It was taught by a professor named Dr. Jim Zions. And he really, you know, he just gave us the facts. He just presented the whole, journey of HIV/AIDS and some of the policy making behind, you know, treatment and housing. And he just gave us the facts and allowed for us to make our own decisions about the process of, how HIV/AIDS was handled in the United States. And so that really began to fuel my curiosity and passion for public health. And so I started to take a lot of courses in public health. So I minored both in public policy and also in community health. And again, one of the things that my parents always instilled in me is to volunteer, to volunteer in within different communities. So you start to develop a sense of what your passion is. And so I started doing volunteer work when there were, health promotion events. I would just volunteer myself. And so that continued. And then I landed a job at a nonprofit organization. And so and then the journey just continued.
You definitely exude the heart to serve, and that comes through your work. And I have to believe that your mother pursuing a doctorate degree was a powerful vision for a kid to witness and be around, that learning is a lifelong quest or something, right?
Yes, definitely. My parents always said, whatever you study, make sure that you pursue it to the highest level of education. And that wasn't really, it wasn't to be elitist, but it was really to get as much knowledge as you can. Very earlier on, I knew that, my parents, once I finished my undergrad, they wanted me to have ground level experience to make sure that public health is what I wanted to do. And so she asked for me, she told me to, start looking at jobs. And I landed with a nonprofit organization called Center for Social Support and Education that was providing, treatment and also housing for those living with HIV/AIDS. Just volunteering again. And from then on, she started asking me questions about, what about graduate school? Just putting little key messages. And of course, when you're a young adult, you get very frustrated with your parents almost planning your life, and I was just like, I just finished school. Like, what are you talking about? But it was my mother's way of saying, well, don't stop there. Just keep going. And so I was fortunate to obtain my master's in public health education and public health. And I focused on health promotion and behavior science. And my advisor was Dr. Mel Hovell. And he said, Nafisa, you're in a master's program, but I'm going to train you as a doctorate. And so really, my training for my master's degree in public health started with him. He intentionally trained me so that I can go ahead and pursue my doctorate. And I was awarded a fellowship from the National Institute of Health. They paid my education under his mentorship. And so I've been very fortunate and blessed to have mentors that believed in me and encouraged me throughout my career to just continue to reach as high as possible. So for students out there that are listening, it's really important to surround yourself with mentors that are as passionate as you are in regards to the field that you want to pursue, but also surround yourself with practitioners, those that are at the ground level doing the day-to-day so that they can also inform you with, you know, some of the plans that you might have in terms of what type of job will best fit your passion. And so I've had a very mix of, you know, both academic and practitioners that have influenced my decision making about my career.
Right. Yeah. You're definitely an amalgam of mentorship, excellent mentorship, parenting, childhood observations in Niger and Illinois, yeah. All of which brings you to this pinnacle post. But, you know, interestingly, thinking about students and them mapping out their futures, most youth, and you and I might have been this way too when we were youthful, think that when you're a doctorate, you've reached the so-called terminal degree. You now know everything, and it's time to start telling and not listening. But I know this much about you. It's not a terminal end of the line. I now know everything. How do you continue learning, and how do you stay open to learning when most people would think you've acquired the pinnacle degree and the learning is over?
Yes. As I stated, for me, I've always, you know, through my parents, just seeing, you know, how they carry themselves, you know, as successful as they are, they're very humble. You know, having a six-year-old and a two-year-old, I'm constantly learning from them. And especially like during COVID-19, where, you know, here you have kids that, you know, are having to be flexible with schooling, wearing masks, and you just see, they just go with the flow. And so I think that, you know, life teaches us how important it is to be flexible. But also, I think that when you're humble, people will tell you the truth. If you carry yourself with a know-it-all attitude, people are going to walk away. People are never going to tell you the truth or how they truly feel. And so I always, you know, remind myself of creating that space, you know, so that people can have honest conversations. They might be difficult, but they're necessary, especially in times like this. And so I believe that humility allows us to really listen to different perspective, and it brings people together. And so, and that's what I strive for. It's just, I think that's just the key value to always have.
Right. Right. I note that key words, you express with particular enthusiasm are, facts. You use the word facts when you were talking about your mentors and the HIV AIDS crisis and people speaking facts and truth and not dressing it in politics. And you speak of truth. And once again, not dressing it with any perspective, but it is fact and it's truth and humility and being humble. These are great key words if others are looking for words to live by. Speaking of humble and humility, then, let me talk to you about the subject at hand, COVID-19. Talk about a humbling experience, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the theme of our conversation for your episode of this podcast is pandemic emergence and regional management. So what I'd love to have you do is take our listeners back to March of 2020 or even before March of 2020. I guess for you, the moments that you began to learn of and consider the threat being presented by this novel coronavirus and what it would mean for you and your team at Black Hawk County Health. When did it surface? What were your preliminary thoughts? And did you grasp it initially, or was this something of a gradual, oh my God?
Mm-hmm. I think that one thing about me for the listeners is that I'm globally oriented. So I remember during the interview with the Board of Health, they asked me, they said, do you know where you've applied to? You know, and so, and I laughed because I've lived in so many different places in the U.S. But home to me is not a physical thing. It's an internal thing because of just, you know, being exposed to different environments. And so for me, pandemics, I mean, I've always understood that, you know, global is local, local is global. You know, so when you see how, you know, Ebola was able to come to the U.S., you know, this shouldn't be have been a surprise to anybody. But again, I'm humble enough to know that not everybody is really as engaged about, you know, pandemics or epidemics. It's, you know, so that's me saying, okay, Nafisa, not everybody thinks the way you're thinking, you know. So I was not surprised of COVID-19 coming to Blackhawk County. It was something that was going to happen environmentally, how we're closer to each other than we think we are. I think that it was a gradual, we were watching like everybody else, you know, looking at, you know, what was going on with Europe and just everybody here in the office where we were on edge because our training has taught us that at some point it will be here. And so in March, when that first positive case arrived in Blackhawk County, basically it was like, okay, it's here. And so we all hands on deck. We have to do what we have to do now for our community. And so and with such a, you know, this pandemic has taught us a lot about, you know, ourselves and also hopefully, you know, the direction in which public health needs to go for the future.
Yeah, and I didn't want to go into that in a moment. But for those who aren't aware of Blackhawk County and our demographic, we're at about 131,000 citizens, I believe. And I was on your website earlier today. We've been hit pretty hard. We're approaching a year. We're a couple months from having a year of this bout. And I believe your figures attest to about 10% of the county's population has had a encounter with the COVID-19, an infection. And tragically, we've lost 243 citizens. Yeah. So share with us how your team is managing. I think this is particularly interesting. You all are epically busy, and you don't have much time to tell your story. So I'm really grateful that we get a chance to tell your story. I mean, you're managing a logistical challenge of testing that no one could have imagined, safety protocols across public and private sector, vaccine coordination. I mean, there's so much being managed in your shop. What are the tricky parts that you feel are the particular challenge, and where are you more proud than ever of your team?
Well, first I have to say I have a brilliant team. I always say they are the genius behind the scenes. They are exceptionally brilliant, intelligent human beings, but they're also compassionate and dedicated. And you see that, you know, when an intelligence is intertwined with compassion and dedication, boy, you just get a group of just dedicated individuals, and I'm very fortunate to be the head of this agency because they make my life easier. They're always prepared. They do the data analysis. You know, they alert me with what they're seeing. You know, some of the communication out in the community. It's just a blessing to be part of this agency. So with Blackhawk County, you know, one of the things that the Board of Health, you know, which is a makeup of five different individuals who are also very dedicated and very passionate about public health, you know, they had hired me to restructure the health department to ensure that we are providing the essential services of public health. But with also the demographic changes in Blackhawk County, they wanted somebody that was really looking at things and asking, you know, are we doing the right things we need to do with the populations that we serve? And so with COVID-19, we really took on a health equity lens, you know. But prior to that, and I say this even in national platforms, you never prepare for a pandemic during a pandemic. You prepare for a pandemic before, you know, and that is why the investment in our public health infrastructure is important. But at the local level, it's very important for health departments to be engaged with their communities. And so we were, through the community health needs assessment, we built very strong relationships with our community leaders. One of the things that took me by surprise my first year, we have 40 different languages spoken in Blackhawk County. For us, it was, what are some of the communication barriers? I want everybody, whether English or non-English speakers, to get the same information. Who do we need to partner with to also help us do the promotion? And so not taking on this role that we know everything that's best for the community, but partnering with the community so that they inform us what are some of the strategies that are best for them. And so that's something you do before a pandemic. So when a pandemic like this happens, you are ready. You have those built relationships and people will help you. And that's what you see, for example, with the Tyson outbreak, we had very sick people, but they were coming to the health department asking for testing. And we had those materials translated in different languages. We had also people that were that spoke different languages that were on call, 24/7, so that if those individuals couldn't reach the hospitals, or the hospitals were utilizing language lines that they needed interpreters that really could understand the individuals, they were available. So those kind of strategies. And also working with businesses, what excites me about public health is the fact that we're in like every sector. And so this pandemic highlights it. We are working with the schools. I'm in biweekly meetings with the superintendents, with our healthcare leaders, with our business community. So it's just we're in every sector, and so that's the beauty of public health. I get to learn about the things that people are doing. But it's been, one of the things with this pandemic, it's been very difficult because some of the approaches with COVID-19 we've had to do it along the way. And so when we had shortage of PPE, the community came together, people were making masks and face shields, the testing of testing kits, is the responsibility of the public health department to get the test kits to our healthcare systems, and so those were different roles that we had to play, but really the community came together to provide the essential services. I needed, for example, childcare, at some point. My husband is here, he's an engineer. There are times where he needed to go to the plants. And so we needed childcare, and the childcare was resource and referral. They stepped up to the plate and provided childcare to frontline staff. And so really it's been a big undertaking of coordination, but my gratitude goes out to the community because they've stepped up to the plate and provided the necessary services so that we can do our job.
Yeah, thank you. It is a equal opportunity infection, but it is an inequitable distribution of the infection. And we both know the Tyson story and elsewhere. And you're championing an equitable solution platform is laudable, and we're grateful. So, Nafisa, you speak of the midst of a pandemic, not the time to plan for a pandemic. So let's turn, let's fast forward. The fun thing to think about is, say, September of 2021 or whenever you think life in Blackhawk County will be more or less back to normal. How do you envision life in Blackhawk County to be different in terms of what we do, where we go, how we interact or behave, as a result of living through this and hopefully conquering this COVID-19? What's it going to be like?
Well, I first hope that, everybody gets to spend time with family members, quality time, especially those that have been in isolating. I myself haven't seen my family in over a year. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I think that it's important important that we also celebrate the small wins. But once this pandemic is over, this is going to be a big celebration. And also it gives us the opportunity to really pause and I think mourn the lives of people who have been lost. I still think, you know, we haven't been able to grieve properly. And it's important that we do that because, you know, now we see there's rise in mental health, you know, and that also has to do with people not being able to connect the way that we normally do. Human beings, we need that connection. And so I hope that people will have a chance to do that. But in terms of public health, you know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned through this pandemic is how it's important for public health to be more visible. I think the invisibility of public health has also allowed for the politicization of public health. And I also think that being in a field of science, it's also important for us in these particular fields to be able to balance science and also human behavior. You know, those are two things that I think that we have to do more work on. You know, for me, it seems that, you know, there's a struggle between moral values and scientific facts, you know, and so how is we as scientists, you know, help in ensuring that people know that it's not, they're not rivals. Martin Luther King said this, they're not rivals. They're actually meant to be complementary to each other, you know? And I think that is something very important. I'm passionate about, you know, and also, the rural communities, when you see, it's not just COVID, but you see also, you know, rural American, I was predominantly rural, disproportionately impacted by chronic health diseases. And these chronic health diseases are also the conditions in which COVID-19 can create really serious illness. And so I think we need to do better in tackling the root causes of these chronic diseases. And so those are some of the things that I'm interested in seeing how we approach it. I'm very excited about the direction in which Blackhawk County Public Health is going in partnership with our healthcare systems. You know, our role in public health is to prevent people from being sick. But I don't think that we've done necessarily a good job at explaining what public health is. And I think that that's something important for the future.
Well, that's certainly a silver lining. You know, no one likes going through this dark cloud, but there are silver linings that you and others in the healthcare professions are rock stars and people didn't know you existed in some corners prior to this. And now there's a great new appreciation for the heroes in the healthcare space that are keeping us all safe that we took for granted for so long. And the advantage that you cite, that we know so much more about preventative health and chronic conditions and awareness. So let's go very forward, not necessarily so fast, but let's look long term. Is this the last we will ever see of COVID or any other pandemic? And if not, how should we all prepare for maybe dealing with it better next time?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, we talk about, you know, global warming. And as I stated, you know, we're closer to each other than ever. You know, I have deers in my backyard. And sometimes, you know, I get excited when I see the kids excited about a deer, but it also makes me sad because I'm like, you know, we've taken so much of land, you know, and we're so close. So I'm an environmentalist in that regard. It's just, so I think that there's really a lot to do. But I think also nationally, you know, it's important that we have, you know, national plans, national preparedness plans, statewide preparedness plans, and also, you know, local plans that align with whether it's national or federal level. And I think that it's important that the state and federal level also utilize people that are at the local level to inform their decision making. You know, I recall there were periods of time when I was getting information from the state level and I was like, this is not going to work for Blackhawk County. This is not going to work for Blackhawk County because we know the community. We know the people that we serve, you know. And so I think it's really important to not always think that by being equitable is to have the same formula. In actuality, that's being equal, you know, but we want to be equitable, you know. So our approach should be, what do communities need, you know, and assessing these communities so that we really address their needs. And so I think that there's more work to be done. But I really think that at this moment, the public health practitioners at the local level really are the ones who are experts at responding, because we are day to day dealing with our community and addressing their needs. And I urge anybody, any student that has an interest in public health, you know, to feel free to reach out to me, you know, and also, you know, to get the experience at the ground level. It makes a huge difference for future careers.
That is going to be a great question that I'm about to queue up, but I don't think I have time to go into it. I wanted to probe a little deeper where you were headed, but instead, let me ask this final question of you. History has borne out that Spanish flu and other catastrophes, including Y2K and 9/11, have all, in their wake, spawned great interest, especially among youth, to enter those fields, much like the service motivation of youth. The kids today are seeing all this, and they want to be part of the solution. So another maybe silver lining of this pandemic, which we hope we don't endure again for a long time, is that we've got a lot of youth queued up to want to serve and be meaningful and help in the event that there ever should be another. So a final question is just one more touch of advice to the young Iowa boys and girls listening to us here who say, I wouldn't mind following in her footsteps, or I wouldn't mind being a virologist or a statistician or a vaccine developer, biochemist. What would you tell the sixth grader, the eighth grader, the 11th grader in school to be doing now to set the table for success in being meaningful in your line of work?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, first of all, you know, make sure you study, make sure you do your homework, continue to pursue the passion. And continue to volunteer, continue to reach out. You know, one of the things that I used to do as a student was email professors. You know, some might not answer, but there will be that one professor that will answer, or that one person in the field you know, that will answer. And that's why when I get emails from students, you know, prior to COVID, I would immediately respond to them, because I remember what it was like to be on the other side. And so continue, don't give up, you know, and really pursue it with passion. You know, make sure it's your passion. You know, I never go to work. I never go to work because it's my passion. Every single day I wake up, I'm happy. I'm doing what I'm passionate about. So I never go to work. I'm actually just doing what I'm passionate about every day. And so even during difficult moments, the next day is easier for me because I am pursuing what I'm passionate about. And so always make sure, you know, when you pursue your passion, it will never feel like you're working.
I think our listeners' main takeaway from you, among many, is going to be that you didn't wait for destiny to steer you. You steered your destiny. You controlled your path by preparation and taking advantage of opportunities.
Yes, yes, yes.
Dr. Nafisa Cisse-Ebonyi, Director of Blackhawk County Public Health, and so much more. Thank you for launching our series on STEM of vaccine with all that you do to keep the citizens of Black Hawk County safe and healthy. We all owe you and your staff a debt of gratitude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you to you all for supporting public health and supporting us. Thank you.
Absolutely. This has been episode one of our third series of STEM Essential podcasts, featuring the voices of edunomic innovation, brought to you by the Iowa Governor's STEM Advisory Council. Thank you for listening. Today's and all STEM Essential podcasts will be available at iowastem.org/podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to STEM Essential. To learn more and find resources, please visit iowastem.gov.